I'm Anita Lustria, and this is Faith Conversations. Today we're sitting around my kitchen table again, and I have with me my son, John Lustria.
Yes, I'm back.
And Mike Murphy, my husband. Hey,
yep,
Mike.
I'm here.
And I'm glad you're here. You'll be joining me on many more Faith Conversations, as will a variety of other guests. And if you're brand new to the podcast, I hope you will head to AnitaLustria.com and take a look at previous guests and listen to the archives. I've had a lot of great response, and I have no marketing money, so I would love it if you would tell a friend about it. Just when the podcast comes out each Monday, if you would just share the podcast on your Facebook page or tweet about it, that would be great. I would appreciate it. I do that every Monday morning. You can just share it from my Facebook page if you're not a friend already. Well, today we're, you know, the last couple of weeks we've been talking about a variety of topics. And John, I know you you like to talk and think.
I do. I am your son.
Yes,
after
you
all.
Are. Verbal processor. I am one, and I had one. And
yep.
So, you wrote down a few different topics. Where do you want to take us today? What are we going to talk about?
Yes. Well, before we begin, if this is your first time tuning in, fellow listener, and you have no idea who I am, I'm John, and I am studying history, University of South Carolina. Just started my graduate work there this semester, and I got my bachelor's in history from University of Illinois past year in 2015.
Well, and I love that you jumped in and decided to introduce yourself, since I hadn't done it. And, you know, you're also the son of a broadcaster podcaster.
That's all right. It's in the genes.
It
and there's
is.
Another person here on the at the table who
Thanks
could
for
use some introduction.
John.
Thank
Good.
You, John. Thank you. John Failden mentioned that as a history major and graduate student, he's preparing for a life as a waiter.
And
never too early to begin.
That's painful.
But he's doing a good thing. Liberal arts education is a wonderful thing from my perspective, and he knows that. Hey, I'm a pastor. I have kind of a passion for all kinds of good things. Justice, one of them. Chicago Cubs is another one, much to John's chagrin, because he's a White Sox fan. We have a divided household.
But not when it comes to the Bulls.
The Bulls were
all
on the same.
Bulls.
Yeah, we're all pro Bulls on this, but it's the Cubs White Sox kind of thing. And we've made John, when the Cubs games are on, to go sit in the shed. So it's wonderful.
It's all right. I've gotten used to it.
Yeah. All right. Now back to the biz at hand. So, topic, where are we going today?
So I never actually really listened to Midday Connection, because I really wasn't in the demographic. Given that I wasn't a woman, not that guys couldn't listen to the show, but
I
it wasn't
heard from
like
a lot of them. Plenty.
I know. I've met some, and like, you know, but the show wasn't intentionally directed at
And you
them.
Were younger too at the time.
That's another good point. I was younger. So
and then you moved away.
So I never listened to Midday Connection.
Okay. Even though you were on from time to time.
I was on occasionally.
Milrose Club.
But I have been an avid listener to this podcast.
Can I say that warms my heart?
Well, good. I'm glad.
No, that's not why you're listening, but
one that I listened to not all that long ago was with Andrew Peterson.
Right.
And it was very good. Mm-hmm. I really enjoyed it. But they were talking, since he is, among other things, a musician, we're talking about music. And music is something that's very, very near and dear to my heart, which my mom desperately feared it might not be. And now you could say I've surpassed her in terms of how much I love music. Potentially more to come on that later. But Andrew Peterson was saying how he and his daughter were our deep feelers, and how things impact them so much. And what made me think of that is they kind of express themselves musically. I'm not that talented of a musician, but I express myself, I guess, listening to other sorts of music, and I listen to a rather unconventional type of music, or unconventional for most people. I'm a big metal fan, and I hope to justify that over the course of this podcast. So that's kind of generally.
And actually, metal is described as music you can't understand, in lyrics you can't hear.
You can understand it, but You have to, you know, I can understand it now.
No, but John like really likes screamo music, which is a whole different genre in there.
Well, kind of.
Yeah.
It's a tributary.
Yeah. Well, what I listen to, not that most people really care, but what I'm listen to is metalcore music, which yes does generally involve screaming vocals. Which most people, and for me initially, they're hard to understand. But once you kind of know how to listen to them, they're generally pretty clear. Now there are some people who they just are very unclear screamers and have no idea what they're saying, unless I look up the lyrics.
Well, John, I'm going to interrupt just for a minute because I know some people are going to want to go screaming out of this podcast
that
you love a variety of music. You appreciate a variety of music and you played for 4 years in a praise band while you were at the University of Illinois. Currently are part of a praise band, worship band at the University of South Carolina. So, so even though you like the heavy metal kinds of things,
your
appreciation
as
only genre. So
yes, my I've spent several summers working at Harper's Ferry, and a highlight of the summer every year is they have this annual jazz concert where they bring in jazz legends and they give them this sort of what is kind of a lifetime achievement award, the Don Redman Jazz Concert, which, by the way, if you live in the West Virginia area, you should go to Harper's Ferry in the summer. It's usually last weekend in June. You should be there because it's great. Although jazz is not my go-to, it's a lot of fun.
Okay.
So I just love live music in general. I just think there's so much fun there.
In relating it to feelings, music elicits something inside of you, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And
probably inside most of us, but to different in varying degrees.
Right. And in different ways, too. You know, I guarantee you most people listening will turn on metal music and be like, well, how can this make anybody feel anything other than abject terror and horror and rage?
Which is a good question.
Yeah, sometimes I get that. But, you know, I've been to metal concerts before where I've literally wept from how impactful it is. Music has a capability to express, I think, people at like a soul level. Mm-hmm. And it's different for everybody. And, you know, certainly not everyone finds that in metal music the way I do. But I think it's some sort of combination of both the music and the lyrics.
Yes.
I generally don't think only one or the other. I mean, certainly it's possible, but it's much more difficult, I think, for only music or only lyrics to really impact someone.
Unless it's the soundtrack to A Charlie Brown Christmas, Vince Guaraldi only music.
I didn't say it was impossible.
Okay,
I just
said
it's unlikely.
But don't you think that's what art does? It brings something forward in us. Now, I am not a metalhead, nor do I. But I appreciate that you are, and you get something good out of it, and I really believe that. You know, I'd probably go more towards a good folk rock kind of
thing. And I was just thinking about this.
Kind of thing, because it harkens something to me. There's always some justice threads in that, but they tell a story.
Can I just say this? Because this happened recently.
What happened?
So I came into the house from, I'd been at the health club, and I walked in, and I hear this voice that I vaguely could, I mean, I recollected it, but I couldn't pinpoint it. But it was folk, and it was coming out of a speaker in the great room where you were sitting. And in my head, the thought was, oh, I don't really like that, but this is Mike's kind of music. And it was Pete Seeger.
It was Pete Seeger, who was
from
a
which
rebel,
era? Yeah.
Yeah, you know, 50s and 60s, that great folk era where he talked about what was going on in the world, but he used music to express it. And that's what sometimes people, I think, forget. I love sacred music. I like Christian pop music sometimes. A lot of that.
Well, I'm amazed at the thoughts that are written in today's contemporary songs that are very thought-provoking. I think often If we're a Christ follower, it's easy just to like, just write off something that is, well, quote, sure, secular, when there can be some great lyrics. This used to happen on Midday Connection. Mm-hmm. We would play a secular song for the sake of discussing the lyrics, and we would get all kinds of heat from people. Mm-hmm. No. We must be thoughtful about all of life, and all truth is God's truth, no matter where you find it.
You stole my thunder.
I'm so sorry.
That's one of my favorite quotes that you shared with me by your friend Rosie De Rose.
Yes.
You know, I go to metal concerts frequently because I'm a big fan of the bands, love the music, and a lot of them are really just foul. Mm. I mean the people up there have foul mouths. I mean, obviously I don't know them, but from what I do know of them, they don't appear to live, you know, God-centered lives. But a lot of times these bands filled with, by what I know of them, are just not good. They put out some really beautiful pieces, beautiful to me anyway. You know, there's
but thoughtful.
Oh yeah, but very very thoughtful pieces. You know, there's one song called "Life Cycles" by The Word Alive, which is not a Christian band,
despite the name that might suggest it. Right.
Right. Yeah. But it's a fantastic song, and it's all. I mean, I love the first lyric. You know, I'd rather die for what I believe than live a life without meaning, which I just I love that, and it's about that sort of a thing. You know, living passionately for. You know, what you really believe in. And so, you know, these guys, not great guys from what I know of them, but they managed to write a very impactful song, which I think is no small thing.
Well, you know, as people of faith, and this is a faith conversation, I think it's wise for people to pay attention what the songwriters are writing about, what playwrights are, you know, writing about, what novelists are writing about, because they're bringing their own experience into their art. And, you know, as Christians, if we say, hey, we want to fulfill the Great Commission, we can't really do that unless we understand the context in which some people live their lives. And we can have great conversations as we enter into their art without buying in 100% to their message.
Right.
And that's the beauty of it all. People just turn on an oldie station sometimes, and all of a sudden they hear a song from the summer that was the most meaningful to them.
Yeah.
And they break out into tears because that music brings back memories that are important. And anytime those memories come back, I think God would say, pay attention to them.
Well, music can often be the soundtrack to our lives. I mean, I think of weddings and the importance of some of those, you know, father-daughter dances or mother-son dances or the first dance of the couple, you know, they're representative of something that's important. And music is really important to me as well. And I, John, you already talked about this music and lyric, but it's amazing. You know, you can have a great lyric, and you can have great music. But when you marry the two, which doesn't always happen, that, you know, that's where you have a great, deeply impactful, usually, song. And I think that's the stuff that usually makes me feel something really deeply. I think that's why we love the music that we love, whatever genre it is. We want to feel something deeply. I think that's part of how God created us too.
Sometimes it expresses us better than we can express.
Absolutely.
Not too long ago, I was going through kind of this fit of depression, I guess, and I kind of didn't really know where I was coming from, but these three songs, I had my, you know, phone on shuffle, and these three songs came up, and I just cried my way through all of them. And they're songs I'd listened to several times, you know, dozens of times before that, but this particular time, they made me weep like there was no tomorrow. Mm. And after listening to them again several times, you know, I kind of figured out why. But I was having trouble expressing it, but these songs that came on kind of expressed me better than I could express myself.
Mm-hmm. I had a song that did that to me earlier in the Advent season that came on, and I played it on a loop for an entire week. one song, but the first 2 days of it, I cried along with it, and then eventually I sang along with it. And, you know, I mean, musically, it was just, I've always loved the song, but this, it came on in shuffle mode on my iPod at just the right time when God was kind of shifting and moving and swirling things inside my heart. And I still don't fully know the deeper meaning, but I, you know, so I'm still pondering that, talking about it, you know, writing about it, and trying to figure the deeper thing out. But God, at the very least, I think, you know, he can say to us through those things, you know, this is something you need to pay attention to. I think when those deep emotions come out, this is something to pay attention to. And I think we can so easily dismiss it and write it off as just, well, oh, that's nice.
Well, don't you think we have to have go-to songs, too, that we sometimes go to? I know when I get kind of in a funky place, you know, John Michael Talbot writes some beautiful kind of, they're very worshipful songs. He prays the he praised the Psalms a lot, a lot with it. Fernando Ortega, who I know is a friend of yours, Anita, has written some beautiful things. But those, over the course of time, are places I can go, and they especially if I need calming down, I can listen to them. I can put my headphones on and whatnot. It does it. And I think that's why people, you know, people say, well, you don't want to go to secular music. Well, sometimes some classical music is exactly what you need, and it's not necessarily composed or conducted or played by people of faith, but there's something about the music that God uses just to touch your soul in the right way.
Well, that's where I want to interject and say the whole secular sacred conversation. It's, you know, we are
crazy. Going back to Rosie DeRosé's
quote,
it's almost a nonsensical discussion. You know, all truth is God's truth. So, I mean, if something is good, it's good, and if it's not, it's not. Granted, it can sometimes be difficult to discern, you know, which is better and best on a scale, because art, in many ways, is so
subjective.
But, you know, something is secular versus sacred. It just, it doesn't seem to be the right question to ask. That doesn't mean it's a bad question to ask all the time, but I don't think it's necessarily the best question.
I'm with you there.
You know, I like to listen to, when I get a chance, to Garrison Keillor, Prairie Home Companion, and God bless his heart, he's retiring. And, But just that show. And sometimes there is religious music on it, but that's not the, you know,
it's just good art.
Everything is good art. There's good humor and whatnot, and it does, something. There's something about, I think what it is, there's something about story. A good song is a story.
Yes.
The music, the composition has a story to it, and there's the way God uses stories. You know, I'm convinced the best preaching is stories.
Yes.
Yeah, and you just reminded me of kind of one of my favorite thoughts that I had once when I was in high school. I don't remember too many of my high school thoughts, of those that were worth remembering. I'm sure there's plenty that aren't.
I remember many of them.
One of my favorite thoughts that kind of hit me is that, like, you know, when, you know, God has blessed, you know, everybody with some degree of talent in some area. And, you know, I am not particularly gifted at, or at least at this moment anyway, writing songs and stuff, but I appreciate so much those who do. And whether people know it or not, I think when they exercise these gifts that they have, not just songwriting, but just anything, whatever it is, it's, you know, they're paying honor to God in their own kind of way. Again, I think this can be an unconscious thing, but by kind of honing their craft, and really, you know, putting out the best possible piece of whatever it is they're doing, you get kind of, I think, a glimpse of what heaven will be like. You know, everyone really good at something, or maybe we'll be good at everything, I don't know. But something, I think we'll all excel at something. in heaven anyway, that God has kind of uniquely blessed us with. And, you know, someone's musical composition will be really unlike anybody else's because, you know, of how they approach things and whatnot. So anyway, I appreciate the uniqueness and the kind of God-honoringness of the, you know, art of all shapes and sizes.
That's a good high school thought. Yeah. But no, but I mean, you know, it's that really that we all are living out of those who know Christ and those who don't. We all bear the image of God. And so, you know, we're all, you right. know, making, creating out of that sense, whether we're aware of it or not. Those of us who know Christ certainly have a different kind of awareness.
But we're almost afraid of honoring those who use their gifts in ways that mm-hmm. aren't as effusively
well, not overtly,
Christian, you know,
yes.
because we fall in love with Christian movies, for instance. Well, I don't like that adjective for a movie.
Right.
I don't know if a movie can be Christian right. or not. I think there's directors and writers that happen to be Christians, and they use that to glorify God. But a lot of the stuff that we put labels on, Christian, you know, Christian movies are probably the best example I've come up with, aren't very good usually.
Or Christian bands.
But you get a guy like Andrew Peterson, he is first and foremost, I know he's a believer, mm-hmm. but he's first and foremost a songwriter,
storyteller
with his music. And I think that's what he'd want to be known for.
Because he's an author as well, tremendous
fiction
writer.
That's what gives you access mm-hmm. to people. When they appreciate your art, they'll let you tell your story sometimes. Mm. But if you come in with, you know, with the word Christian in front of it, that turns a lot of people off. They go, oh, this isn't going to be any good, or this is going to be mediocre, or they're going to force me to believe
Which
something.
I do want to add, there is plenty of excellent Christian art out there.
Oh, yes.
You know, I just want to say that, your point, though, I hear your point totally.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah, there are definitely things that run the gambit of being really good and not so good that mm-hmm. have the label Christian on it, just as there's all kinds of things in the secular world that are very good and really not very good. But you reminded me of Flyleaf, which was one of my favorite bands.
Did they break up?
The Lacey Sturm, their lead vocalist, no longer with them, but she's doing her own thing these days, which she has an album coming out, which I'm very excited about. But that's another story. But they were asked once, you know, are you guys a Christian band? And they're like, well, I mean, we're a bunch of Christians who happen to be in a band together, but, you know, if we were all plumbers, you wouldn't ask us if we're Christian plumbers, you know, that we believe that, you know, because we're Christians, it will kind of flow out to kind of everything we do, and we happen to be in a band together, so you can
Good
call
response.
Us a Christian band, or
yeah.
you cannot. It doesn't really make
yeah.
a difference to us.
Hey, before we wrap up our conversation here today, I wanted to ask you, John, if we talked enough about or, you know, the deep feeling piece. I didn't know how much more you wanted to... We
right.
talked about music, certainly.
We did.
And talked about the two converging, but they're separate things, too.
Right. Well, I think music kind of provides an outlet, you might say, for the deep feelers out there. Things that... Well, I liked what Andrew Peterson brought up, this quote, you know, and he couldn't really remember perfectly, and I sure can't remember it perfectly, but it was really good. You know, every touch is a blow. Every friend is a lover. Something along these. Basically, anything that, you know, is kind of normal, you know, is felt 20 times more by artists.
Yes.
Apply to artists.
Yes. Or just deep feelers.
Yeah. So whatever you want to call it, we're very kind of an odd breed of people, which sets us up for very high highs and very low lows.
Angsty types.
Yeah, very angsty, which is probably why I still listen to, you know, metal and punk music and angsty stuff like this. But, you know, I am who I am. I don't care.
I wonder.
People can mock me.
I wonder if we even like people that feel deeply sometimes. I think we're a little afraid of that.
I think I can speak for myself. I don't know about you, John. I think I sometimes can feel like a misfit or feel like I won't be accepted if I feel too deeply, too openly.
Well, sure. And it's interesting when people say, I go to church and this music move me, but you can't tell, you know, because when feelings overcome you, I'm surprised, today at church, you said there were some people crying. Mm-hmm. And bravo to them that they were able to do that. But sometimes I wonder, most worship services should never be able to end because people are feeling something, that either great joy or sorrow.
But we're afraid to express that in front of others, say in whispered tones.
You, Mike, you're doing great. You keep reminding me of these things that I wanted to talk about. I'm always struck whenever I go to a concert on a Saturday night, and then I go to a church service the next morning, night and day. Just how kind of into things the crowd is. And to be fair, there are a lot of kind of inherent differences between a concert venue and a church that make it the way it is. But it gets me asking all kinds of questions because, you know, like, why should people, you know, be so hyped up to see, you know, a band full of nut jobs play some weird music where, you know, people are singing to the creator of the universe and they're sort of standing there,
with no passion at all.
Well, it's like when you watch people from a church, you see them on TV at a sporting event. And, they're just jumping up and down. They're wearing their hats backwards. Yeah. They're taking off their shirts. They're doing all kinds of things and
painting their face.
Painting their face.
I'm glad you mentioned a sporting event because Wes, my friend who was on the podcast not too long ago, that's his ideal vision of what a church service should be like, a sporting event where, you know, or like kind of the musical section of the worship service where it's not, you know, I'm misquoting him now, but I should just stop with this because I know I'm not going to do it justice and I'm already kind of losing what he was saying. So ignore that. Sporting event's a great idea, but one thing that kind of, how I was able to reconcile this a little bit, and this is true, I've spoken to a number of people about this, but not everyone really loves music that much.
True.
Or at least that particular genre of contemporary Christian music, which I like. I definitely don't love it.
Mm-hmm.
But not everyone really likes music all that much, and you know,
or doesn't like to sing too.
They don't
right?
like to sing. They're not there for the music, whereas at a concert, everybody
for the music.
So that's one kind of key difference. Yeah. But it gets you thinking. In any case,
the trouble with Wes's look at church and as a sporting event. You know, I preached this morning. I'm glad nobody got up and
no one
went,
came and
boo,
tackled,
boo, boo.
Yeah. Or no
Throw
one came,
out.
Or no one came and tackled you.
That's why I stopped on that because I'm sure he actually said something like this.
But it's the passion and emotion.
When somebody gets elected president or whatnot, mm-hmm. We live in Chicago, and I mean, frankly, whether people voted for Obama or not isn't the question. But it was fun watching.
Oh sure!
Excitement
in the city
on the screen, and that happens when there's Republicans or Democrats. All of a sudden, it elicits something in them that, mm-hmm. that makes them act just a little bit differently than they would have. Mm-hmm. They would have, and whether that's their real normal or not, we don't know.
Right? Yeah. Rather than I don't know. I guess feeler isn't a bad way to describe certain people, but living with passion, and that by its implication. Is kind of a detriment to everyone who doesn't live with passion, you know, quote unquote. I love the idea, probably because that's who I am, of living passionately for everything that you do. Which it's not that I do that all the time, but I don't know. That's what I kind of strive for, and whenever I think about that, I always think about Joakim Noah, first of all. Because that's
and for people who don't know
center
that name,
for the Chicago Bulls,
the greatest basketball team out there, which isn't true,
except for the Golden State Warriors.
Yeah, yeah.
Anyway, that's
Cleveland Cavaliers.
But I also think it's fascinating. You can kind of tell that Joakim Noah, this basketball player, kind of lives passionately just from watching him play basketball, and I think that's a fascinating idea, which is a whole other story about how much basketball can express a person's emotions, which I'm sure most people don't care about.
But it is interesting too. People can be passionate in one area of their life.
Yes,
I've listened to your mom say, "I'm going to interview this person," and I've read the book, and I go, "Oh, this is going to be a great interview because they write with such insight and passion," and then they get on, you know, they got on the microphone with your mom, and you're going, "Oh." They don't know how to show that passion verbally.
Yeah, or that they're a great writer, but they're not a good verbal communicator.
No. And that's okay. And that's okay. Because passion, I think, can mean different things. Somebody can be very, very passionate and be very, very quiet.
Yes.
You know, and sometimes we don't differentiate that. That sometimes the music, in any crowd where you're seeing a lot of people at a music concert, they're just going wild and crazy. You'll see a few people are just kind of sitting there. Maybe even with their eyes closed, just taking it all in. Different expressions of the same kind of passion.
Yes. You know? Yeah, good point.
Right, yeah. I was recently struck with my friend Wes, who was here, who, you know, to me, when I'm having a good time, I'm talking and engaging with people verbally because that's how I do things. And so there was something I had to do, you know, when Wes was here, and I'm like, well, and Wes was kind of being quiet. I was talking with someone, probably mom or something, and I was like, oh, sorry, Wes, I have to do this thing. He's like, oh, no, it's fine. I really enjoy just kind of sitting back and just kind of being there without really engaging with people, which is such a foreign concept to me, but it really drives home that everybody's different and how diverse the body of Christ is, which I love.
Extrovert versus introvert.
That's why I like watching a game while you and your mother talk.
Oh, man. That's a good place to close it.
Yeah, sometimes I watch the game and talk to the game.
Oh, yes, not sometimes. That would be all the time.
Your mother talks to herself.
Oh, yeah. Okay.
And as a result of both of you.
Hey, hang on. I've got one last thing to say. I'm Anita Lustria, and this is Faith Conversations. Oh no, we're done.